Have a seat, have a seat. Those of you who wish to sit, please sit. Join us, please. Let me see. Come in. Those of you who join, come sit. Have a seat. Many people to thank, but I'm going to just go down because I have a bad memory. Everything about me is bad, except my appetite. So what happens is this. All of us, there are people, my friends have come very far, Mr. Frank, and some have come from New Zealand, some have come from the Netherlands, some have come from Malaysia, Singapore, some have come from England, because we decided to go on a pilgrimage. So they all wanted to join. There was a lot more people who wanted to join because of time and all that. They couldn't make it. So these are some from Switzerland, I forgot. And there are many people here. And we have a Dharma center in Kuala Lumpur, and it's called Kichara House. And Kichara, of course, you know, is the diamond heaven of Andhra. So I instead of putting Kichara holy place, Kichara House, we wanted to make it more welcoming. And our center is dedicated to the long lives and the proliferation of the great masters, such as His Holiness, and all my gurus, all my masters, and for the spread of the Buddha Dharma in general. And our group, we have quite a nice group, cozy group. They are very dedicated Dharma practitioners, and they are very sincere, and like all Dharma practitioners everywhere. And we're not blessed with so much Sangha yet, but I'm going to make a difference. We're going to see a lot of... here we have a lot of blonde Sangha. We're going to have a lot of black hair Sangha, but not Tibetan black hair. It's going to be fair skinned black hair, not Tibetan medium skinned dark hair. So that would be nice. More Sangha, better. Where there's more than four Sangha, the Dharma will grow, as Buddha has said. In any case, I have many lamas. I have many, many teachers. And I've taken oral transmissions and initiations and transmissions and commentaries from many, many great masters. The most illustrious from Tibet. And my root guru is His Holiness Khyentse Sonrenji of Dhamma Monastery, who was the one who set me on my path, told me who I was, but I'm still looking for myself, and tell me what I should do with my life. And I'll never forget the time and all the blessings I received from His Holiness Khyentse Sonrenji. And then prior to that, I met His Holiness many, many times, the Dalai Lama. His Holiness Kepi Ling Rinchi, the great Lama Yeshe I've met, and I received many teachings and commentaries, and commentaries and initiations from His Holiness, Khyentse Lama Sopa Rinchi, and Ganden Chi Rinchi, and so on and so on. And my designation is from Ganden Shatse, and these holy monks have come from Ganden to help me. This is Geshe Punzo Doji. He's a Geshe from Jiangse Monastery. This is Geshe Chunzu Wangchuk from Ganden Shatse Monastery, and that is Gendo San Wangchu from Ganden Jiangse, and that young guy there is from Ganden Shatse, his student, and they all came up here to help me to bring the statues and all that stuff. I came here about 10 years ago. The center was small, there were few people, big gate around, and I remember a very kind person at that time, Kabir Saxena, and is he here? I'm thinking, well, oh, there, I'm so sorry. I remember a very kind gentleman by the name of Kabir who spent some time with me. I don't think he'll remember me because I was just another little teenager running around, a silly Tibetan teenager. I am a silly Tibetan, but not a teenager anymore. I'm in my 30s. We never reveal our age, right? Okay, so I came here. I came for some courses, and I came for some classes. they were extremely beneficial to me. And afterwards, I had the great honor to go to Yu Kathmandu and attend Kofan courses and again meet His Eminence Lama Sabharaji. And it's very strange because I have very karma to meet him all the time. Whatever cities I end up in, I always find out His Eminence has arrived on that day or the day before. And whenever I show up at the center, He happens to be there. I don't try to go meet Him. It's not easy to go meet high lamas and take their time and go there and tell them all our little crazy, you know, hang-ups and neuroses and problems that are self-created. So I usually don't go in and try to get an audience. But due to my good karma, wherever I go, I always bump into His Eminence and somehow seem to get inside the audience room. And His Eminence, Kedar Sovereignty, has been an immense benefit to me personally, not just on a dharmic level, on a worldly level, in getting anything, visas, help, assistance, in many, 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 many ways. I remember when I was in Kofan Monastery once, we had a 1,000 arm Avalokiteshvara initiation, and His Eminence was supposed to come around 9 or 10, and of course He showed up at 12, but it's okay, because, well, what are we there for? We're not there to hang out in the home restaurant and have more momos. So if we wait for the Lama, even waiting for the Lama is collecting the merit. And anyways, we were in a huge tent in Kofan, huge, and it was freezing, very, very cold. And I had walked up from Boda, because at that time we don't have any money for transport and all that, and the roads weren't too good. So we'd walk up from Boda, which take us 2-3 hours, you know, and we carry a lot of offerings and fruits and everything. Well, I would. And we'd walk up there, and one time I showed up at the initiation, of course, at 9, and when you go up toward Kofan, the hill, it's very dark, and you can't see at all. So when you go about 2/3 up, it's totally in the dark, and I left late. So I was walking around in the dark with my robes on and with my offerings and kilos of fruits and all that stuff. And when we arrived in Kofan, I missed the main road. I actually had to climb up the side of the cliff, so I was actually climbing. You know, I climbed on top, and I was a little messy, but I made it. And then when I rushed up there in the dark, I found out His Eminence was going to be a little late. And we all hung out, just waited around in the tent. And around 12 o'clock, His Eminence showed up and conferred 1,000 arm Avalokiteshvara initiation. And about 3 hours into the initiation, I was, and I think everybody was, starving, cold, thirsty, hungry, slightly frustrated with ourselves because, you know, I had to pee as usual. And anyway, we just hung out there. And they served us Tibetan tea, which at that time, I'm Tibetan, but I didn't like it because I grew up in the West. So at that time, I didn't like the Tibetan tea, but anything hot and liquid, I would take it. And so when we got the tea, and some of us you may know, some of us may not know, but Sabharamji has a wonderful habit of offering tea for about 15 to 20 minutes until it gets cold. So we're all standing there holding our mugs and watching the steam. I was actually visualizing the steam going in my mouth and offering to my Yidam in my heart. It was wonderful. I just offered steam until there was no more steam to offer. So I just watched the butter get harder and stiff. And then Lama Sabha, of course, was in full meditation. He was doing his offerings. And a part of me, 99% of me was saying, wow, no attachment. 1% of me was thinking, hurry up. Okay, 2%, I admit. And finally, when Rinpoche finished, we had tea. And then we concluded the initiation. And then I thought, oh my God, I've got to walk down to Boda in the dark again, another 3-4 hours. And Rinpoche doesn't know me at that time. I mean, there was nothing, anything about me. I was just a skinny little young kid. And out of the crowd, there was hundreds and hundreds of people there in the tent. Out of the crowd, Rinpoche signaled his attendant to call me over. So when he called me over, he said, you have a place to stay. Where are you going? And I said, no, I don't have any arrangements. And I was so moved. Because it's very rare that high lamas in Tibet will show the power of clairvoyance. And I'm not praising Rinpoche, because I've seen it on many occasions. It's very, very rare. Especially within the Gelugpa tradition of Lama Tsongkhapa. It's frowned upon to show any type of extra-normal powers. You're supposed to show the essence of a Hinayana practitioner on the outside, a Mahayana practitioner on the inside, and in secret, one that wishes to liberate others, a Vajrayana practitioner. So in the holy tradition of Lama Tsongkhapa, any type of extra-paranormal powers is frowned upon. Always. So Lama Sopo was very, very kind, and well, he showed it to me obviously openly, and he called his attendants and made a space for me inside the kitchen in Kofan. And Kofan that time is quite small and it's crowded and very warm and beautiful. And he made a little spot in the kitchen for me, and I had he even gave me a sleeping bag, and I thought, wow, initiation, blessing, I was noticed. You know, we all want to be noticed. We all want to be different. We all want to be somebody. We all want to be emanations or a dakini or a dakta or where His Holiness the Dalai Lama's cousins, nephews, brothers, sisters, sons. We all want to be somebody or something. When we walk into Dharmapuram, we all want to be noticed. We want to be different. We want to be recognized. You know, we want that red seal from the government of Tibet, the Dalai Lama's, come down and say, you're somebody. And, well, I did my best to bribe my way and I got it. You know, I wonder. But they said, no, we don't take bribes. Anyways, just kidding. So, I felt so wonderful that night. I felt warm because I had a warm sleeping bag to sleep in. And I was extremely tired, but I went to bed extremely happy because I thought to myself, wow, the Lama is so kind. The Lama is so incredibly kind. He takes care of me in many, many ways. And I had body energy the next day. And I went to bed thinking, wow, if I do my practice, maybe one day I would have a little bit of qualities I lost over time at that time. And it was so beautiful, so nice, and like that on many occasions, many, many occasions. And that's just a small example. There are bigger examples I won't get into now. I told you about before. Many occasions that Lama Sopa has been very kind to me. And I have a special wish. It's not only Lama Sopa, all my Lama centers, because I have 13 gurus. And all my guru centers, all my gurus are establishments throughout the world. I would like very much to support, to help, to proliferate in any small way, in any way possible. And some of you consider yourself my students, unfortunately for you. And some of you want to be my students, unfortunately for you again. And some of you like me, unfortunately for you again. And that's my wish. I don't think I'm ever going to be someone so great and wonderful like some of these high lamas from Tibet, like His Eminence. I aspire to be, but aspiring and reality are quite different. So I aspire to be, but in reality I know I'm not. So the second best thing is to rejoice. To rejoice in the activities of Arya beings and ordinary beings like ourselves. So we're in the center of one of my gurus, His Eminence Kedja Sogorinchi. And he and his group guru, Lama Yeshe, has benefited the Dharma in foreign countries out of Tibet in so many numerous ways you guys cannot even foresee because you were not in America in the teachings. You didn't meet them. In fact, my group guru, Kedja Sogorinchi, through Lama Yeshe's kindness, was brought to America, was invited by Lama Yeshe first, and then later came to our center, Thubten Dajeling, and I had the honor to serve and to be his cook and to be with him. And all came from Lama Yeshe. And in the Tibetan community, some of you might know, might not know, when Lama Yeshe started teaching non-Tibetans, he was highly criticized. He was highly criticized because they always said, in Tibetan, they have a saying, the yellow heads will never be able to learn the Dharma, will never be able to absorb, meaning foreigners. And he was highly criticized because it was unheard of to share Tibetan secrets, you know, whatever secrets that is. I don't think bodhicitta is a secret, but never mind. Foreigners. And so he was highly frowned upon. And when he started benefiting, and the centers grew, and the people grew, and the commitment of the people grew, the Lama Sopa and Lama Yeshe's force is a very powerful force in the world. And why is that? It's a force of love, compassion, and spreading the holy Buddha Dharma. And I don't know if I can ever be that big and strong, and I don't try to compare, I don't really care, but what I feel is, if we can support, and we can help, and we can contribute in any small way to this kind of force, it would be to our good fortune. Because, as you've heard thousands of times, adding a drop to the ocean, that drop of water will remain until the ocean dries up completely. So that's what I'm doing now. I'm adding a drop, my contribution. But Lama Tsongkhapa is not a drop. And to the ocean of His Eminence, Kedja Sogorinchi's incredible activities. I'm not saying this because we're in the center. We wouldn't be here if I didn't believe that. Incredible. That's one. Number two, His Eminence Kedja Sogorinchi is such a high Lama, very attained. Yet, he himself says that his centers and he himself are there to proliferate the teachings of His Holiness the Dalai Lama. I thought, wow. Never recognizing one's own qualities, but dedicating one's efforts and energies to other Arya beings. So that was a very good example to me. So when we help make donations and make offerings to holy places like this, we are contributing directly, indirectly to other activities of Arya beings. So I want you guys all to rejoice. In the future, this is not the only time. You know me, I make statue offerings and offerings and, to everyone everywhere that I go. And I like it, I enjoy it, because I rejoice. I rejoice sincerely in the activities of others. So last month when we came with a small group to Bodhgaya, I asked you all to come see this institute. I didn't know it grew so big and beautiful and so wonderful. So wonderful, so incredible. The feeling is so nice. And we're going to be a copycat. We're going to make something like this in Malaysia. Some of you know we're looking for land. Some of you know we're going to get land. And we're going to make something like this. And so when we get all older, you know, and when some of us get old, you know, when I get old in many years from now, if I live that long, we're going to stay at the center. We're going to do this kind of work. This is the Gomba. Gomba is Tibetan for Hakam Kasuta, prayer hall, gathering hall, teaching hall, puja hall. Then we're going to have retreat centers like this, retreat places, stupas, just a beautiful energy, a world within a world of Dharma practice. And it will be a place that will be serving the needs of others, taking care of the needs of others. And that's going to be a very good purpose. And last month when I came here, we came into Gomba, I just wanted to flit in and flit out real quick, because I like to go in unnoticed. And so I came in here and I met a wonderful young lady from America. I don't see her here. Is it Michelle, is it? Melissa, I'm sorry. She's not here, huh?
No, she's going to the border. To the border.
Oh.
Visa.
Oh, she'll come back, right? Please give her my regards.
Yes.
I met a wonderful young lady named Melissa who was so friendly and kind when we came to Gomba. So helpful. And I was so impressed and I thought, wow, she really reflects the Lama. And then afterwards, I asked her about the altar and I didn't see a holy image of Lama Tsongkhapa. And I thought, well, Kopan has one, why don't we have one here? And so she kept insisting on meet Frank Croft. And I said, no, I don't want to meet the director, I want to get out of here, quickly, quickly, you know. And she said, no, meet him. Then we went in there and he was very, very kind. And we promised Frank to offer a Lama Tsongkhapa statue. Some of you know, because some of you I've seen over there talked about. And Kuma Namgyel, our Tibetan artist, sitting behind there, was very, very kind. He immediately offered Kuma Namgyel, the Tibetan artist, the handsome guy over there with a Buddha, immediately went to Delhi and talked to the statue makers, and Lama Tsongkhapa was not available. It had all been invited out. They didn't have any extra available. So he was very skillful, and he used very skillful methods to bring blessed alcohol and blessed ciggy buds to the workers there to rush up so that we can make it in time. And I didn't tell him to rush it up, you know. He actually did it on his own volition. And he had it done, and he sent me the good news, but I didn't want to tell Frank because, you know, with us Indian and Tibetan people, we're not too reliable on time, you guys might know. So I didn't want to tell Frank, oh, we're coming, did we show up, there's nothing here, just a picture, it's silly me, right? So he told me it's ready, and I was so excited, and he brought it down 2 days before we arrived, and brought it to the hotel, and my four friends, the monks from Ganden, came up to help also, and they washed it with a lemon and all that stuff to make sure in the future there's no acid that remains. I'm sorry, there's no the humidity, yes, is removed so that it doesn't become white. And so they had it cleaned with a lot of lemons and they washed and brushed it. And then the artist was very kind. He immediately, in one day, painted the offering gold on the three holy faces. And we have already gotten the mantras for you also. And the mantras are offered on there. I think last month we offered money for the altar, but you can use that wherever, whatever you like. It's been offered, it doesn't matter. And His Eminence was very kind to say to put it in the main altar over there. So our plan initially was to make the altar on the side to put it in. But now His Eminence has said to put it inside, so whatever His Eminence says doesn't matter. It's correct. And we have ordered the clothes already. The clothes is a very busy time in Dharamsala now. We've ordered it with the best tailor, and it will take about 2 months approximately. And when the clothes arrive, then Kuma Namgyel will deliver it here to offer the clothes on top. Nangsha, Nangkuben, Nangkaben, Nangkusha. The hat, the apron, the lama's coat, and also the inner shirt, everything will be offered here. Until then, Lama Tsongkhapa is going to have to, maybe need to put a sleeping bag on him, I don't think so. And we bought some toe offerings. And these are all my friends in Malaysia, and I not all of them know we're going to do this because we didn't know if this actually would make it on time, but it's very, very auspicious. Very, very auspicious. Very, very wonderful. And I thank the director, Frank, and the people working here for doing such a wonderful job of this place. And I'm not anyone to say thank you or congratulate you. I'm no one, but I just rejoice. The energy and the pervasion of the love and the feeling here is wonderful. I feel so nice. You know, I feel so nice. And I wish none of you knew me so I could just sneak here and join the course and just hide out in the room. But the cat's out of the bag, so... In any case, because you're going to look at me and say, oh, what kind of weird room tea is that? He doesn't know anything. He just sits there and picks his nose. So I won't show up. And so what we're going to do now is we're going to do a short... Oh, what I want to say was, I've already explained to all of you the benefits of offering holy images in holy places to holy beings. So in short, again, how many ever atoms there are that's contained within the image that's been formed will be the amount of merit that we make without any other mantras that increase the blessings, increase the efficaciousness of the mantras. That's one. Number two, the mantras we put inside, the mantras we put inside. Tibetans have this fear that, oh, I forgot to put the mantras inside, right? Sorry, the Om Ahom. I'm sorry. And Tibetans, the villagers believe that if you leave the statue empty, the evil spirits go inside. But I don't believe that because evil spirits are all around us, and I think there's one inside of me, so it's okay. So I don't worry about that. And Kaji Soren, he said that if you believe that this is Manjushri, if you believe that even this stone is Manjushri, by the power of Manjushri's compassion and skillful means, that stone will confer the blessings of Manjushri. So based on that, I don't believe in things like that. But I do believe putting holy mantras in, holy images, holy relics in. Every time someone makes an offering, a prostration to that, if there's 1,000 mantras inside, they'll be making offerings to 1,000 mantras. So it's very powerful. We've already offered that here. And however many days the statue exists, everything's impermanent exists, is the amount of merit we'll make every single day. And some of you here might have thought, oh, I didn't contribute anything to it. You don't need to. Just rejoice from your heart. Rejoice. Okay? It's the same. It's the same. Many years ago, I couldn't offer anything at all anywhere. All I do was rejoice. Everywhere I went, just rejoice. And when I got some money, I still rejoiced. And after I realized, you know me, always trying to get away with an easy, free ride to enlightenment, but it doesn't work. So I've stopped. I'm rejoicing. I'm also making offerings of rejoicing. So I've stopped saving the money and rejoicing. So then the money came from a clean place. You know, I didn't bring all these beautiful girls from Tibet and open up a brothel and from that profit I'm buying all these other statues. No, it came from holy, sincere motivations from wonderful people. And the place where it came from is clean. The object itself, of course, is the King of Dharma Lama Tsongkhapa, we don't need to mention, and his two great disciples. And the place we're offering to is a temple, is a monastic institution. It is a retreat center. It is a place where hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of Sangha, and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people who give up their lives and time and energy come here to study, to practice, to retreat, to do the Dharma in order to gain some sort of mind and power and energy to be a benefit to others, inspired by their gurus. So we're in a place where people, where you talk about sacrifice, which leads to renunciation. In the beginning, we don't have renunciation. As Swamiji used to say, the renunciation is artificial in the beginning, but it starts somewhere from sacrifice. And people come here from all around the world. I like this place because it doesn't suit one type of being, it suits many times. And many people come from all around the world, giving up their jobs, making time with their jobs, their family, their lives, the hassle of visas, financial constrictions, and they go through many, many difficulties to get here. It isn't easy because I've done this before. Getting visas is just a big, fat hassle. Huge, huge bureaucracy and red tape. And to even go through the visa stuff, you have to be some kind of aspiring bodhisattva warrior. Because let me tell you, in Delhi, I've done it through the red tape and the visas. It is a nightmare. It is a nightmare. Everybody tells you to go everywhere else and you end up the same place after about 21 days. And then that's after a lot of pujas, a lot of divinations, that's why no email, a lot of calls for a lama. And it's a lot of hassle. And people come here for what? They didn't come here to breathe the air. They didn't come here to look at the sights. Yes, the tree is wonderful, the Bodhi tree is wonderful, you know, but we can sit on the tree, nothing happens. There are dogs and there's people and there's me sitting on the tree, nothing happens. But we have to generate something to hear. People are here for a reason, to practice the Dharma. How? To learn, to listen, to contemplate. Listen, learn, contemplate, and put into action. And it took a lot of effort to get here. So if we offer things here, many, many beings will come through here and make offerings. And they will be able to collect merit towards their practice. And we contribute towards that. So every single person who comes here makes a prostration. Every single person who makes a circumambulation. Every person that generates a bodhicitta here in front of this altar. Or any person that sees it. We help them towards their spiritual journey, their spiritual practice. And we contribute towards that. It doesn't have to be our center, our place. It doesn't have to be anything. It is from our pure mind that we contribute towards this. And I think that's wonderful, that's one. Number two, we're offering it to a high being. A being who's a living bodhisattva. Again, I don't believe in praises. I say what I mean. I don't say what I don't mean. That's my style, you guys know me. We're making offerings to a living bodhisattva. One of the greatest lamas of our time, existing and living in our world. And we're making offerings to the lama. Although the lama is not here, he's traveling, benefiting people, it doesn't matter. We don't need to be recognized by the lama. We don't need him to smile at us and say, give us a nice letter. We make an offering to him and let go. So when the lama hears and the lama comes and sees, incredible waves of merit. Incredible. That will contribute to our spiritual practice. Why do we want to collect merit? This is not like a game. You know, we don't stand there and have a little book marking how much merit we've collected. So that we can get to heaven or something weird. Collecting merits is that whatever we learn, we can apply into practice that I explained to all of you before. Whatever we learn, we apply to our practice. And that learning and the application, there's something in between, there's a bridge, and that's merits. Some of us may study the Dharma very hard. It's difficult to hold our vows, our refuge vows. Some of us study Dharma very hard. It's difficult to stay in retreat. It's difficult to think about renunciation. It's difficult to change even a simple habit. Even if we have friends that are near us, our husbands, our wives, our friends, our roommates, our flatmates, whatever, our parents, and we can't seem to make peace with them, or we have difficulties with them, and we have difficulties with ourselves, and we have a lot of fears and insecurities, and we have a lot of problems and outer difficulties and inner obstructions. We have a lot. We have so much of that. And so we need to find a remedy. When we listen to the Dharma, that is the ultimate remedy. But listening to the Dharma, knowing the Dharma, understanding the Dharma is definitely not enough. You can be listening to the Dharma for the last 25 years, like me, and end up nowhere like me. And you come to realize, oh, wait a minute. Something's missing. I know it. I can explain it. And I understand it. And when I read the Dharma books, I've read it all and seen it all. I've received every initiation out there. And so you think, what's happening? Why do I still have this anger? Why do I still get frustrated? Why does my frustration come so fast and deep? Why do I get so unhappy so fast? And I can't make headway. And you get frustrated. You get unhappy. And so the difference here is the collection of merit. Merit. Yishikito, sonankito. Two types of merit. Merit, and wisdom merit. Wisdom merit at this time we can't do because that we have to engage in the practice of emptiness, which is quite profound. I won't go into that today. I'm empty of the knowledge of emptiness, so I won't talk about that today. But yes, but we can make merit. Sonamkito. When we make merit, then our practice becomes easier. We don't make offerings to temples and high lamas and sangha so that we can clear our business problems, clear our long life problems, clear our relationship problems. That comes as a side benefit without even thinking about it. Side benefit. You don't have to think that I want this, and this if I make offerings to the three jewels. It comes automatically, any worldly pursuits. But we should actually think, may I gain some headway in my practice? May I gain some renunciation? May I gain some kind of mind that realizes that, hey, from the time I'm born up till now, all I do is eat, defecate, sleep, make shelter. And then how many years have passed? And then when I look in the mirror, I see more and more wrinkles. I see my hair getting grayer. I see the exuberance of my body being lost. And what's left? How much can I eat? How much can I run around? I've seen everything there is to see. I've danced in all the great places. I've partied and I've had fun and I've laid in all the beaches. You know, I've talked, I've seen all the counselors, I've taken all kinds of medicines and medications and you know, everything. You know, I've done mushrooms and nothing happens. And I'm still here. And why is it that I cannot make headway? Never mind seeing Buddhas. You know, all these lamas and some practitioners, they have dreams of seeing Tara or whatever. I dream about seeing Tara. I don't dream about it at all. And I think, why? Why don't I see Tara? Why don't I read biographies of high lamas and geshis and that? They always have dreams and auspicious signs. And why don't I get anything? Why? Of course, I don't tell anybody that, but I'm telling you now. But never mind. You guys won't say anything, right? You won't know. So I don't get dreams. I don't have clairvoyance. I don't have anything. Why? Never mind clairvoyance, dreams, controlling the weather, exorcisms, controlling elements and all that stuff. I can't even control myself. I can't even control when I'm going to take a poop or not, like I complained this morning. I'm still on relaxants or whatever you call it, right? Laxatives. I can't even control my bowels, never mind control my inner fears and anxieties. And it's true. I can't. This morning I just couldn't poop. I sat there and sat and meditated and sat and just couldn't come up. And then I found out you don't eat bananas if you want to poop. I ate a dozen last night because I'm on a diet. I'm on a constant battle with myself, losing weight. And I think I was Karen Carpenter in my previous life. I don't know. But anyways, I can't even control my bowels. Never mind control myself. And I'm really getting tired of fighting myself and fighting myself not to fight others. I'm tired of looking at people and noticing everything. And that gets on my nerves. That gets me frustrated. That gets me unhappy. That makes me angry. I'm tired of scolding people out of anger. I'm tired of noticing things wrong. I'm tired of expecting things and things don't come my way. I'm not saying this to be humble. I really am tired of that. And I think back, wait, what makes the difference? And I think some of you are in that boat with me. Some of you, with respect to the Sangha here, some of you are in that boat with me. And so what do I think? Is we go back to Lama Tsongkhapa's Brahman Chamber, the great exposition by Lama Tsongkhapa. We were reading this just before we came. And there's the link, making merits. Making merits, and it will only be merits and not karma if our motivation is correct. And if we make merits, we will see our learning of Dharma, our reading of Dharma, will become easier and faster. And our understanding of Dharma will be smoother. And we will see the results of our practice. Then you will see your neurosis become less. Your afflicted emotions. That really is the cause of our own unhappiness. I hate to re-quote great masters a million times over, but it really is the object that makes us unhappy and makes people around us unhappy. Never mind all sentient beings. If we can just make sentient beings around us happy as a start, that would be fantastic. If we make our wives happy, we can make our husbands happy.